Hi, welcome to BFSI Industry Insights. I am Sujana Hari from Ashwin Parekh Advisory Services, APAS. APAS provides business and transaction advisory services in banking, financial services, and insurance sector. APAS continuously works with BFSI industry, regulators, and the government to bring valuable insights to its clients for better decision-making and steering growth. In this episode, we have with us financial services veteran, Mr. Ashwin Parekh, Managing Partner, Ashwin Parekh Advisory Services, to discuss with us why foreign banks are exiting or scaling down their operations in India. Hello, Ashwin.
Hello, Sushma.
So, as we know, Citibank has recently joined the list of foreign banks that have either exited or scaled down their operations in India, with sale of its consumer banking business to Axis Bank for $1.6 billion. Just before that, First Rand Bank exited India last year, and NZ Grindlays, RBS, Commonwealth Bank of Australia, HSBC, Merrill Lynch, Barclays, Standard Chartered, they all have scaled down their operations. All the foreign banks which are continuing in India are pretty much exiting retail business, that is the consumer lending business, and are focusing on trade finance, wholesale lending, investment banking, and treasury activities. So as you can see, exiting or scaling down, this has pretty much been the story of foreign banks in India. So Ashwin, how do you see this? Can you take our listeners through the journey of foreign banks in India, where it all began and where it started fading?
Yeah, well, the story of foreign banks, actually, you know, in the India, it goes back to the 19th century. Now, around that point in time, we had, you know, a couple of UK banks, a couple of European banks, and a couple of American banks also. In about 91, 92, when the reforms happened, and that was the first promise India made to open its economy, both to international trade as well as to foreign banks. I mean, strictly on the basis of reciprocity, you know, the Indian banking opened up, the regulator opened up the Indian banking to foreign banks by way of the branch mode. It all began with that. And in the 90s, we saw a lot of foreign banks growing their footprint in India. Now, right from the time it started till about now, so if you know, you see that initially all the foreign banks, when they came to India, they set up their operations in the sort of metro cities. So most of them came to Mumbai, being the financial capital of the country. And then some of them went to Delhi and other locations. And the traditional ones, I mean, the ones who had started in India even before India got its independence, and even before 1990 story, you know, had their operations even in places like Kolkata and those areas, because economically it made sense for them to be there. So that was the first story. The story of foreign banks was a story of bringing a lot of know-how, a lot of organized processes, structured banking. You know, so it was a different approach altogether. And they enjoyed, in fact, the foreign bank branches enjoyed a certain edge over the Indian banking. So mind you, till about 91, the Indian banking was all public sector banking story. But that's the first backdrop. It all began with that. The foreign bank branches got their first boost, you know, and they could expand their sort of ledgers, both the deposits as well as they could expand their loan books, mainly arising out of two or three major factors. One is, as I said, they had sound risk management practices. They brought good technology to India. But more importantly, in the backdrop of all that, there's something else happening. I mean, the world was going the globalization way, which means the trade was opening up. The World Trade Organization, the WTO, was examining the possibility of enhancing, you know, the global footprint of trade. And in that backdrop, foreign banks really flourished very well. They had a lot of advantages over their counterparts, being the public sector banks in India. 92 Indian private sector banks came in. That was a time when the first level of expansion of banking happened, not just by way of ownership, but also by way of capital, by way of depth of banking, depth of intermediation in the Indian banking. So that's how it all began, basically. The story was fairly rich till about, 2002, 2003, when the first signs of changes started happening. the Indian private sector banks had by then started putting up their act.
Sure.
And I'll tell you more about what that act was.
Sure. So that's an interesting journey. Coming back to the reasons, you know, the reasons range from global strategies to online banking to uber competition from domestic banks to even differential treatment of foreign banks and a host of other regulatory issues, right? So, but overall, they all seem to have missed Indian growth story. So what, according to you, have been the reasons and what could have been the alternate journey for them in India if things were to go well? And what are those inflection points?
Sure. So, see, I mean, basically, the story was fairly different. Let's say banks like ICICI Bank and HDFC Bank came up on the horizon, they were licensed, and they went through their initial period. And some of these entities, which came up in 92, you know, had, in fact, you know, their roots in the development financial institutions to which they belonged. And then they transformed into universal banking or commercial banking, as we understand it. So around that time, the foreign banks enjoyed a certain amount of distinct advantage. I still remember in services like transaction banking, in services like advisory and wealth management, investment management, and working with large and mid-sized corporates. Because mind you, foreign banks were always present in the urban areas and in the metro areas. But that story changed. In 2000, between 2001 and 2005, a lot of private sector Indian banking had put their act together. The first act that they put together was they wanted to take away the so-called technology advantage that the foreign banks, bank branches enjoyed. What did they do? The amount of investment that some of these banks made in areas sort of which were, I mean, absolutely like core banking, for example, unheard of, I mean, at that point in time. Even in payments areas, we saw a certain amount of changes that the Indian banking made to the point that in 2005-2006, a couple of Indian banks actually had the lowest cost per transaction on account of the technology intervention that they had brought. This took away a certain amount of that lead that the foreign banks enjoyed. That was the first major part. I think the real blow came up, let's say, in 2008. What happened in 2008? The global financial crisis happened. On account of global financial crisis, a few changes, and they were disruptions in some form. First and foremost, the foreign banks, many of them, they had major problems with their own balance sheets in their home jurisdictions. And therefore, they started examining their presence in some of the emerging markets and other markets where they had deployed a bandwidth, they had deployed capital, you know, and they wanted to call back that capital and take it back to the headquarters. Around that point in time, something peculiar happened. I suppose some of the foreign banks examined, you know, and the headquarters examined the arbitrage in the laws, you know, the laws associated with deposit holders' rights. And they suddenly realized that these jurisdictions very clearly, I mean, under their sort of corporate kind of laws, where you have some kind of a waterfall arrangement in terms of who is the preferred, let's say, what are the order in which the liability has to be met with, it was realized that a lot of, I mean, almost about 11 to 12 jurisdictions from where the foreign bank branches came to India, they had arbitrage to the extent that they said that the deposit holders in the home countries had a larger right on the total balance sheet, on the global assets of those banks. This really perturbed, I mean, the Indian policymakers, and it perturbed even the Indian regulators. And it did perturb, in fact, even the industry also, because suddenly, you know, we realized that if a foreign bank pulled out, you know, I mean, sold its portfolio and pulled out its capital from India, I mean, and if it did not do so even then, and if, let's say, if they became insolvent, then the Indian deposit holders in the order of waterfall were far below compared to the deposit holders in the home jurisdiction. So that is something which the regulator paid a lot of attention to. And that is the time when, Sujana, the reforms associated with the wholly owned subsidiaries really came up. Now, around that point in time, few things had started happening. The Reserve Bank of India decided to ration out the branch allocation. They decided to ration out the branch allocation to the extent that about 15 or 16 branches, as many branches as the Indian banking companies were allowed in foreign countries, You know, I mean, that was the number that was determined by the regulator. So I saw, I mean, we saw that about 15 to 16 branch licenses were issued to about 48 foreign banks which were present around that point in time. And the foreign banks enjoyed, I mean, because of the legacy presence, you know, I mean, long-time presence, they had almost about 400 plus branches in India around that point in time. For, I mean, some of the foreign banks started re-examining that. They started pulling out, you know, at that point in time. So I do know that a French bank, for example, decided to reduce its branch network. It had some very prime branches in some prime sort of cities in the country. But then it decided to pull out, to shut some of their branches, and they took the regulator's permission. It was a very perturbing situation. Around that point in time, another major sort of development was happening. Risk management practices in the Indian banking had become more sharper. The Indian banking had, I mean, attempted to reach out to the customers. They were far too quick in their decision making compared to the foreign banks. And the technology advantage was almost withdrawn, you know. And suddenly we saw that there was a huge question mark on this globalization of trade. And suddenly we were getting into a very disrupted environment on the international trade, basically. So these were the various factors that played out between 2008 and 2017-18, basically, when suddenly we realized that the foreign banks had started dropping their market share. The Indian private sector banks were far too sort of competitive in their approaches. And we also realized at the same time that sort of the foreign bank headquarters were not perhaps as supportive as they were in the 90s until about early 2000 period. Sort of. So these are the various factors, Sushna, that contributed to sort of foreign banks to rethink about their presence in India. There's a huge story about their network in India and all. And I mean, Sushna, that's the next thing I could talk to you about.
Sure, sure. Now we understand why the regulator was perturbed and why the whole concept of wholly owned subsidiary as against the branch has come up. It's very interesting as to how these regulations shape up. In fact, all these foreign banks have been struggling a lot with the regulatory landscape, right? Right from priority sector lending requirement to operating as WOS, that is wholly owned subsidiary as against a branch. And the data localization, ring fencing of local operations, a lot of it, you know, basically arising out of regulators' intent to shield the domestic economy from global ups and downs and also to protect a deposit holder's money. So I see where it is coming from. But what was regulators' perspective? Some bit of it you've already shared with us. Why couldn't actually these foreign banks work around these regulations?
Yeah, so there were two or three regulations, you know, which were particularly interesting to note. One was, of course, the whole inclusion, I mean, the inclusive financial services kind of an argument that the central bank, and rightly so, many jurisdictions in the emerging markets had really come out with the fact that only a certain percentage, a small percentage of the population was receiving banking services, and therefore, sort of it was pressed down not just to the Indian banking, but also the foreign banks were expected related to participate in the financial inclusion programs. So they had to also, you know, canvas deposits and also extend loans, you know, to some of the places. Now, this was the first major sort of, you know, challenge for the, I mean, foreign banks between 2010 and 2018, you know, wanted to, I mean, they were all present in either metro or tier one, tier two kind of, you know, urban areas. And they didn't, some or the other, neither did they look for more branches in India, nor did they even get, you know, because their own home jurisdiction wasn't opening up, you know, to the Indian banking and allowing banks like State Bank of India, Bank of Baroda to grow their footwork in their own jurisdictions. So all that led to, and then of course, we got into a major situation of bilateral trades. Globalization was almost dead by then. And we've now got into a new kind of a very new sort of geopolitical kind of an arrangement under which, I mean, the entire international sort of trade is actually getting replaced by bilateral trade. And that seems to be now driving the foreign banks. So wherever, let's say you are a foreign bank from a certain jurisdiction, and you'll enjoy, let's say, a good bilateral trade arrangement with India. If there is a thick flow of sort of, you know, international trade between the two jurisdictions, then the services sort of, you know, are there. And bulk of the foreign banks, I mean, if you start examining, after the first 8 or 9 foreign banks who have more than one branch in India, the others, I mean, all 42 of them now, I mean, whatever the current number, maybe it keeps on reducing. And the number of branches from 400 plus in the 90s, I mean, came down to now almost about 210, 218 kind of a number. So gradually there has been a reduction of branches over these many years. And also, that's also true for deposit base as well as true for the loan books as well. So, and their emphasis now is mainly on trade finance. Now, trade finance, be it bilateral, be it that, let's say, you have a foreign bank from that jurisdiction present in India, somehow or the other, you know, just the foreign trade or the trade finance cannot attract customers. You know, banking companies, I mean, that is banking borrowers, corporates, look for comprehensive services and they look for a domestic part of and the export or import part of trade also. And this is where, once again, the foreign banks have started losing out, because large banks, private sector banks and public sector banks as well, they provide very comprehensive services which a foreign bank does not provide. And so, therefore, gradually, the foreign banking share in India sort of, you know, is reducing. What does the future entail? I thought that it's important to note, by merely working on just the trade finance, you know, is a very thin platform for foreign banks, and therefore gradually they'll continue to lose their market share, Sushna.
Nice. So the larger geopolitical issues are going to drive the scenario going forward, I guess. Some of the banks have actually taken advantage of this conversion into a subsidiary, they've taken that route and have flourished, like DBS, for instance. Do you think the other banks are going to follow the suit? So what is in store for the foreign banks now? What do you think is the future of foreign banks in India? Do you expect more thinning down of operations and, you know, bilateral trade deciding which banks would be in India and which banks would be exiting?
Exactly. Let's look at the first part first. Let's say when we talk about the geopolitical arrangements, you know, and we talk about the bilateral kind of trade, so we find once again that there are, I mean, it's not all negative. There are some very, very, very positive stories, very constructive stories evolving. I mean, we recently saw India entering into a bilateral trade agreement with Australia. US now, we've agreed, despite the geopolitical tensions and, you know, the Russia-Ukraine kind of confrontation. But despite that, we find that, let's say, I mean, US and India are drawing up a very good sort of, you know, mutual kind of trade arrangements. That's the kind of new reality now in the banking scenario, in the geopolitical scenario, and that has got to be having its impact on the banking system as well. So, and now there is also new, interesting dimensions about, you know, I mean, it was originally just the bilateral. Now we are getting into currency kind of relationships as well. So, I mean, earlier, for example, when we had, let's say, a trade kind of an arrangement with Iran, it was all designated in Indian rupees. Now, you know, I mean, for Russian sort of, you know, fuel, Russia will start demanding perhaps, you know, the trade to be conducted in rubles. So, I mean, we are now seeing a very completely new sort of, you know, shape of foreign trade or international trade and the currency in which the transactions are settled. And to that extent, also the banks will have new services, some of the banks, who can really assist the trade. I mean, let's say a rupee ruble kind of a trade or a sort of, you know, a yuan and let's say rupee kind of a trade, or those stories are also now playing out, and foreign banks have now started working out different sets of services and different sets of products for the customers. So it's going to be niche now. I think the general banking kind of system that we had in India for the foreign bank branches, which was deposit taking, loans, you know, all that, that is gradually sort of changing its shape. If you are only in urban areas where retail banking itself is already sort of saturated, that is a good quality of borrowers is not sort of, you know, available in these markets. I mean, those are now sitting in tier 5, tier 6 kind of locations. where foreign banks do not have their branch presence. So I suppose it's going to be an interesting story. How many banks will continue? Maybe we'll have some new foreign banks also coming in on account of this geopolitical kind of arrangements. And some of the existing ones will either scale down, or one fine day they may decide even to sort of, you know, shut their operations in India.
Great. Interesting times to come. Let's wait and watch what's going to happen in this space. Thanks, okay. Ashwin, for sharing your thoughts on the subject. Looking forward to more such sessions from you.
Thank you.
Thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. We welcome your feedback on our show and will be glad to receive subjects of your interest on which you would like to hear our views. Do write to us at info@ap-as.com. Also, please check out our APAS Demystifying Reforms series of podcasts, where we invite industry thought leaders and policymakers to help dive deep into reforms in BFSI sector. We provide platforms like newsletters, podcasts, and video clips to industry thought leaders and policymakers to share their views and experiences on trends and reforms in banking, financial services, and insurance. So goodbye until next time.